give me the chemicals. Like I'm all about the chemicals.
Yeah, I know, me too. We need them. You know, we have a different.
I want them.
I want them, yeah.
I want the drugs. I want all of the drugs.
Mark buys an e-bike and belongs. Brendan has concerns about a heart study, and he also remembered to record an intro this time. It's episode 24 of Convergence. What's in your breakfast burrito, please?
I'm getting a bike.
Dope.
I'm getting an e-bike.
An e-bike. Amazing. Yeah. So you're going to ride that on the road or the sidewalk?
Well, so here's the thing. I was looking up. So I loved cycling as a kid.
Me too.
And I've had two bikes as an adult, and both have been stolen from my home.
Mm. Mm.
The last one was stolen from this current home. The first. Well, in fact, I've had three bikes stolen because I had one when I was a kid, and I rode it to the local corner shop, and I don't think I secured it.
Sure.
And I entered the shop owning a bike, and I left the shop not owning a bike anymore.
Yep.
And I was, I don't know, 11, 12. And then I got one in 2008, and I secured it to a bit of my old shared space in the old flat that I had. So outside, there was this sort of, there was a wall with like a lattice, you know, like a brickwork lattice thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looped this big, heavy, thick bike chain, more like a motorcycle bike chain, and looped that round the lattice work. And one day I was just walking around, I think, in the evening, and I saw this giant hole in the lattice work where they just ripped it out to get to the bike. So, like, they just ripped a part of the wall out to get to the bike.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if people need the money so much that they need to, you know, go and sell a bike that doesn't belong to them, then that's what they're going to do. Reported it stolen. The police were very nice, and it's like, yeah, you ain't getting it back, but you know, you just need a crime number for your insurance, and fine.
Yeah.
Second bike was stolen from where I live now, and that was my fault because I actually arranged in this flat for a bike storage area, because like I bought the bike in 2015 here in the UK. We have a scheme, like a cycle to work scheme, where you can get a bike that's. It's like there's like a funky loan thing, and so I think you get money off, and then you can you pay the bike back out of your wages, basically out of your salary. It comes out, and so that's all fine. And so I got this nice bike, and I asked the people who run the property here, like, you know, is there a bit of storage or a space or whatever? And they're like, oh, I'll tell you what, yeah, we'll convert this shed into a bike storage area. And, you know, a few other people started storing their bikes in there, and it had a number pad lock and stuff. But the door was pretty flimsy. And so, you know, I made the mistake there of not chaining the bike to the bike rack with a padlock. And so I think I had one. I wasn't using it because I was like, oh, the code will be sufficient. Because again, if people really need to get a bike,
they're going to take it away. Yep.
And so that went. So here comes bike number four.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a folding e-bike.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like people, they know stuff, the people who make these bikes. And so the battery is removable and it's locked by default. So you actually need to get a key to take the battery out, because obviously they know batteries be valuable.
Yeah.
So that's quite well thought out. When I bought the bike in 2015, I wanted to cycle to work. I just thought, you know, because I work, where I worked was between here and there is a canal for most of the journey. And so that's a lovely thing to be able to do, is just cycle down the canal. And that was sort of okay. But, you know, if you occasionally, you know, might be made nervous by other people passing in the, you know, the other direction, and it can get a bit narrow there. And so it was a little bit squeaky at times.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, lovely to sort of give that a go. At the time, when I wasn't on the canal, I would ride on, as you would say, the sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
or as we would say, the pavement, which for the longest time, we have always been told is illegal. Don't know what it's like where you are, and I'm sure it varies from state to state and from city to city.
Yeah.
But here, it's like the common prevailing idea is that that is illegal. And so for me, it's been difficult. It's like, do I have the right? And this is, you know, gets into stuff. This is why I was kind of keen to talk about it, because it's not just Mark bought a bike. Like it gets into some stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
As a visually impaired person, like you have this question of like, do I have the right to own a bike and use my bike in places where other people be?
Right.
For the most part, I've just been like, I'm just going to do it on defiance. Like if someone has a go, I'll say, well, you know, what are you, you know, I have a moral right, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't take away my, this is me trying to be independent, whatever.
Yeah.
Trying to get some mobility, get out in the world. And so I always thought I would kind of have to defend it that way, like on moral grounds or whatever. But it turns out, not only are registered blind people, or as you would say, legally blind,
mm-hmm.
which is what I am,
mm-hmm.
not only are they allowed to ride bikes, you are also allowed to ride them on the pavement, like anyone is. It's like a weird technicality about like footpath versus footway. It's some weird highway code thing that's like, no, actually you can.
Awesome. So you don't have to worry about that.
It's just the definition that's a bit weird. And so I'd been looking at this bike for a while and wanted to give it a go. And then having read this thing yesterday or the day before, I was just like, this is great. This is actual validation. This is actual documentation to say, I'm allowed to be here. I'm allowed to do this. Which feels great. And so to answer your question, I might slip into the sort of hug the side of the road occasionally,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to do the whole like occupy a lane and then,
right.
you know, like if I need to make a turn, I'm going to use the zebra crossing. Like I'm going to use a pedestrian crossing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do what a car would do.
Right.
Cause yeah, you know, obviously there's a whole system for that. You know, you get in the right lane, you indicate with your hand
mm-hmm.
and you look, but you know, mirror signal maneuver, there's an equivalent for that on the bike. You look behind you, you make the signal and then you turn.
Yeah.
That's just, it's not worth it for me. It's not worth making that kind of, you know, cause I might look behind me and, you know, I might not be able to judge the speed of something or whatever. So like, no, I'll use the zebra crossing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I'll get about. Some, you know, in some places there are bike lanes. I'm always going to try and find the most secluded, quiet spot. But yeah, I mean, so with it being an e-bike, that gives me some range.
Yeah.
And some real mobility. With my size, it'll probably be something like 20 kilometers. It can go up to 40 something kilometers. But, you know, being realistic about who's on the bike, it's probably going to be 20. So you've got that with like a pedal assisted motor. And then with it being folding, like I can, you know, my dream anyway, the hope is like I can cycle to my local train station, which can get me into town, into the main station where you and I met,
mm-hmm.
which can then take me anywhere, you know,
and amazing. I
can bring the bike, you know, fold it up, bring it on the train. And, you know, if I want to go to Brighton, which is very cycle-friendly, if I want to go to Cambridge, which is where I was last week, which is just very cycle-friendly, then I can do that. And I have that option. And that feels amazing.
That's dope. So when it's folded up, is there like a strap or something that you can, or a backpack or anything for you to, or do you have to like carry it? Or how does that
No,
work?
You just carry it in one arm. It's something like 19 kilograms.
Oh, wow. That's not bad.
Which is, you know, and I think I think it was the one that I tried in the shop when I was there a few weeks ago. And it's fine. It's all right. But it also has, I think you can lift it up by one of the handlebars and kind of wheel it around as well.
Mm-hmm.
So because, you know, it's quite mobile that way. I'm going to hopefully take a look at it next week, and if all is well, I'll put my order in. But like the thing I'm nervous about is, you know, these things tend to have quite small frames, and will I sort of remain straight, or will I start veering and wobbling? That's the bit that I'm not sure about, but we'll find out. But I'm really excited by
that's
not
amazing.
Only just getting the bike, but also like that validation and knowing, I belong.
You belong
here. Yeah, it's big.
That's super cool, dude. That's super cool. I've ridden an electric bike once, just at like a street fair, and it was really fun. I enjoyed it very much. I remember having the idea. Like, I came up with the idea of an electric bike, actually. I don't know if you knew this or not. Back when I was like 15, I didn't tell anybody about it, but it was my idea.
You should have.
And I would bike like nearly every day from our house outside of town into town and go, you know, go to the arcade and shoplift some candy bars or whatever, you know. But there was this little valley and hill to get in between, and you know, going down that part was fun, but going back up, I'm like, man, I wish I had a battery here that was like really propelling me up.
I live atop a hill. So yes, there is no way in my current condition that I would make it to the top of the hill. But you know, with a bit of pedal assist to begin with, and then you know, maybe less and less and less.
Yeah,
over time,
for sure.
Build these, because I've got, you know, when I go running, like it doesn't take me that long to build up some pretty decent calf muscles. Like I can I can get some proper, like those are good muscly calves. Like, they do develop quite well. So yeah,
they do. That's awesome, dude. I'm excited for you. And I want to hear all about it. I want to hear updates.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I hope that my enthusiasm is not too dampened. But yeah, I think it was just that feeling of like, I don't have to explain myself. I just have to be, you know, to anyone. Like, I just have to be careful. I just have to be cautious. And it should just be fine. And, you know, it's the thing I forget. You know, I used to ride my bike as a kid. Like, it was just a thing that I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just normal. You know, I remember one half term, just like for a week, I'd ride my bike down to the local shop and get some, you know, buy a little candy bar and ride it back. And it was just, I did that. And it was just nice, just, you know, having that freedom. And cycling's great. It's, you know, you get to move at a nice little speed. You get to have a look at the world around you. And yeah, it's such a lovely thing. Anytime I cycle, when there's a long straight, like a canal or just a long road, there's a thing from, I can't remember if it's Beauty and the, I think it might be Beauty on the Beast, and it's like Once Upon a Dream or something it is, and it's this, it just feels like very cycle music. It's and so every time I'm cycling, for some reason there's something about that cadence as my feet are going on the pedals, that it's just just feels very like cycling music. It's always in my head when I cycle.
I love that.
This idea of like going out and going to different places, you know, different cities, and actually being able to take the bike and take a bit of mobility with you.
Yeah. When you get to a destination, you're probably not going to be carrying the bike with you the entire time, unless is that your anti-theft plan? Is it just to always have it with you? You'll have to rip it off.
Yeah. Never. Never not with me at all times. I'm going to get the most serious of locks, and I'm probably going to take some of it. Because the other thing is, they don't have spokes.
Okay.
The wheels don't have spokes, because it's to do with the fact that you tend to brake at speed more. I mean, I won't be using the actual E functionality of the e-bike that much, he says.
Yeah, just when necessary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the promise I'm telling myself anyway. The idea is, apparently, because you can brake at a pretty high speed or high velocity, it could like mess with the spokes. It could sort of pull them out of their sprockets or whatever.
Sure.
And so they tend to have, not hubs, because that's what the spokes are connected to. What's the other thing they have as opposed to, they have a different thing as opposed to spokes. And so I don't know the like best way to secure, because I remember, I'm sure there's a thing about like people will take off the wheel if they want to get to the bike. And so you have to be, you have to really be careful about where you thread a bike lock.
Yeah.
To really get it secure. So yeah, I may have to take some advice.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
I've seen some that have like GPS built into them. And it would be interesting, even if you don't have GPS built into it, like having a sticker on there that says you do. Ward off.
Yep. Depending on how things are set up and where I can do it, because people have talked about this before, getting like an air tag.
Yeah.
And secreting that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a whole plan. Me and my parents were supposed to do a bulk deal at the bike shop where we were going to negotiate a discount between the three of us.
Nice.
They've now, bunch of bastards, they've now gone and bought their own bikes.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm going to try my hand at negotiation for the, like, might be the first time. Like, haggling.
Nice.
I'm going to try and get the bike and then a pannier and a couple of lights. See if they'll throw those in for the price of the bike.
Nice.
Because, like a pannier or something like that would be useful to that, you know, then you can put the little tile thing or a air tag. Yeah. After 18 months, my air tag is now starting to tell me that it's losing battery.
Mm.
So I'm going to have to open it up and change the battery at some point.
What do you currently have your air tag in? A bag?
A tent.
Nice.
Yes.
How often do you go camping?
I did this for when I went. So I used it 2 years ago when I was in a campsite in Hastings because I was paranoid about forgetting or like not being sure where my tent was, especially at night.
Smart.
And so it was basically a way to use homing the beacon. Phone to, as a homing beacon. Yeah. And I never needed it in the end, but that was the thinking.
Smart.
Yeah. And so every now and again, I'll leave the flat and I'll get an alert telling me that tent has been left behind. It's okay. I know where it is.
Yeah. At one point there was a software update and it started doing that with my iPad. And thankfully there was an option to be like, no, I trust home.
Yes.
It's okay if I leave it at home. Thank you.
Yes. I tell you what, Apple, and this is starting to come up more and more because their insistence that people refer to the headset as Apple Vision Pro, because they've got this real aversion to using the word the. Mm-hmm. They really hate the word the. And it's causing us, like, we're going to have very strange sentences now, like, iPad has been left at, like,
yeah.
iPad is home. iPad is, like, that's fine. But, like, we are starting to, like, our nouns are becoming very strange.
Yeah.
And we're losing this connective tissue because of marketing.
Yep. I can't remember the example, but I've noticed that too. People just say the noun without the, in other circumstances. It's just kind of
we love iPhone.
Weird.
No. We love the. It's a thing. It's the iPhone. It's
yep.
But then you know, you guys for years, like you would say, "Do you have Nintendo?" And like that, that's not a way that we would phrase that.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
Oh, okay. I've heard it so many times. Like we're gonna go over there because they have Nintendo.
Oh, interesting.
Not at Nintendo.
No, I definitely. In my experience, there was always an "ah."
Yeah. Because it's a noun. It's not like water. We have electricity.
Yeah.
We have running water. We have plumbing. And we also have Mega Drive.
Oh, child. Child is the thing that I hear people...
We also have child. Drop. Really?
Yeah. That they drop the or an A. It's just like... It's for child.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. It's weird. And I don't like it.
No. I mean, like, kids... For years, it's been like... You might say with baby or with child.
I am with child, yeah.
But that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. That's like an anachronism, not an anachronism, but yeah, a holdover.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is for child. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
I think it's because you would say this is for mother as well. You wouldn't say this is for a mother, maybe the mother.
Yeah, okay. But then, yeah, mother and father are both, you know, naming words.
Yeah.
They're not descriptive words. They're all nouns, but like it's a naming word.
Yeah.
It's a name you call someone.
Yep.
So that makes sense. You don't call someone child unless you're from the 1800s.
Yeah. Child.
Words is weird.
I've been calling people children lately.
Children.
I've just not been super impressed with people's maturity lately. You child.
You absolute child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the one of the most kind insults I can give.
Yeah. You sweet summer child.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Got food coming?
Oh, yes, I have. a minute away.
Yummy. What you got coming? Yeah.
Some very healthy potatoes and some very healthy chicken.
Mm.
And probably some salad in there and some very healthy vinegar.
Yummy. Margaret and I are we're going to get a couple breakfast burritos after we record.
Oh!
Yep.
That was something I was introduced to in Texas when I was there for South by Southwest in 2011. Like, oh, you guys, you, in America, like, you do food right. I mean, you know, in so many ways, like, really, really wrong. But in so many ways, you do so well.
Yeah, very right and very wrong. Yes. We just found out that there's a food cart a block and a half from us that has the top three items on their menu, like the main things that they sell, are a breakfast burrito, a guacamole burrito, and a chimichanga. And the breakfast burrito is Margaret's favorite, like, Mexican food, and a chimichanga is mine. And so I've had a bite of her breakfast burrito and it's freaking dope. But I've only had the chimichanga from this place so far, like maybe about 8 times.
What's in your breakfast burrito, please?
Eggs, potatoes, pastor, which is...
past what?
Pastor, which is a spicy marinated pork.
Ooh.
And...
beans?
Yes, beans.
Yep.
There might be... I don't think there's rice in it. The chimichanga has rice and beans, pastor, and cheese. Oh, and there's cream cheese in the breakfast burrito.
Ooh.
Well, it says there's cream cheese. It might actually just be cheese. I'm not really sure. I haven't had enough of it. But Margaret had one last night, and she said it was the best one yet, and like the best breakfast burrito she's ever had.
Wow.
And it's just, this place is just like so close to us. It's like not even walking distance. It's less than walking distance. And it's just like so good. And the chimichanga comes, it's huge. It's massive. It's a two-hander.
Oh.
And what I like to do is I cut it in half and I empty out all the filling, mix it with the salad and the guacamole that they provide with it.
Okay.
Eat all of that.
Frick.
And then I eat the casing. At the end, as a wonderful little treat, this fried dough, and it's like, oh my God, it's so yummy. Comfort food.
Yes. So there's a period in 2012 when I used to meet a friend in center town, and we'd go to this coffee shop and we'd work together, just sort of in each other's company, which is quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of hours, and then she'd leave, and I would go to. I was working in the office of the company I used to work for, so they let me just sort of work there for a bit.
Nice.
And so on a Friday afternoon, I'd after having breakfast at this place, I would walk over to. There was a little van, or not a van, a little food stand that sold jacket potatoes.
Mm.
And I would get like a jacket potato with tuna and cheese. And I would sit and just eat that. And it was just fantastic. Like a really good jacket potato. Like properly well-cooked jacket potato. Or, you know, baked potato is a thing of absolute beauty.
Yum. Yum, yum, yum.
So, so many options as well. Oh. All right, let's talk about someone else.
I like your sweatshirt. I just noticed it as you got up and walked away. I love the logo. I love your logo on there too. I just noticed Morning Creative on your back. I was like, oh, sweet.
Oh, yeah. This is a birthday present.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, thank you. This was a 41st birthday present because, you know, I'm now in the era where birthdays don't matter anymore. Not for another 9 years anyway. So, this is nice and it's very, very comfortable.
That's super cool.
I love my little logo. because, dear listener, I have my logo emblazoned on my chest. And
like Superman.
Very much like Superman. I'll have the man, please. That was a joke from Penn Sunday School. Super Bowl, I'll have the soup, please.
That was a good podcast. I enjoyed that podcast for a minute. That was good.
Yeah, it had its minute, didn't it? I got curious as to whether, because it took a long break and then came back, as to whether We Have Concerns was still a thing.
Oh yeah,
and it's still going.
Oh, it's still going. Wow. Yeah. I hopped back on their reprise and enjoyed that for a bit, but then got rid of it because I did a big purge.
Yeah, it's I was just, you know, curious to see if it was still going, and yeah, they're still kicking it. It's nice to know that a podcast can have a revival.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're kind of just, they're on the same too. Thing. Yeah. I mean, I hope it's still working for them. One assumes that it is, and
I have definitely a study that I would want to send to them to have them tear apart. There's been a lot of hubbub lately in the mainstream media.
Oh yeah, the mainstream media.
Yeah,
the lamestream media.
Yep. About this study that was done by, I don't think it was Harvard, one of those colleges. Mm-hmm. But it was co-sponsored or sponsored or whatever by the American Heart Association.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, to most people in America, that would be like, oh, great. Somebody I trust is behind it. For me, I see that and I'm like, I've got doubts. That's suspect, because there are interests involved.
Oh, sure.
But it's a study that links time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting with an increased rate of heart disease and heart attack.
Okay. Gosh.
And that's, you know, yeah, high level, that sounds really bad. Mm-hmm. But then when you start looking at the data, it's like, how can you make this freaking assertion? Mm. This is mm-hmm. ridiculous. In the 8-hour eating window, 8-hour or less eating window, there were 414 participants. Mm-hmm. In the 12 to 16 hour eating window, there were 11,000 participants. So you're comparing this really small to really large group.
Yep.
The 8-hour window people had a substantially higher rate of smoking. I think that their BMI was also higher, which I know BMI is not a super reliable metric of health, but it was just another factor. Like, we're not comparing apples and oranges of people here.
No.
And then there were two other things. One, it was conducted over a year's time, the data collection on what they were eating and how they were eating. And that data collection consisted of two random phone calls to recall what you ate the previous day.
Ooh.
And that's it. That was how they gathered all the data. And
so then, they're not doing food diaries, they're not doing anything like that?
No. It was two random days. So it was just like picked out of a hat. Like, you just get a call and you have to tell them what they ate the previous day. And like, do you remember everything you ate yesterday?
Oh.
And was it representative of what you're eating every day? I mean, it might be, but like...
Probably not.
Right. So... very suspect to me. Yeah. And
what if you get wrong on a cheat day?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, seriously. Like,
seriously.
Yeah.
And then also, it was conducted a few years ago and the data is just kind of coming out now. Mm-hmm. And it was like 2018 or something, maybe earlier. And the amount of information and everything about intermittent fasting and time-restricted eating has boomed since then, and like guides on how to do it well and how to do it properly and what to be eating during that time. Like, there's so much more information now than there was when this was conducted. It's much more of a thing. Ago. Like, you know, it's obviously, it's something that people have practiced for, you know, since humanity has been around, but it wasn't like, there was only 400 people out of the like 20 to 30,000 people in total. There were other groups as well, but they were kind of comparing those two main groups. And just like there was just red flags all over this study.
Yeah.
And it definitely, I didn't trust it. And then there's a bunch of other studies that show it reduces heart disease for a lot of good reasons because of autophagy and other things. Not just autophagy. That's actually just for longer fasts. But yeah, go ahead.
That reminds me of, I had a hideous thought and I did think about you. I'll explain. About like cell death and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'm playing a scary game at the moment. I'm playing, it's an old game, but it's Dead Space. It's my kind of creepy. It's my kind of horror because it's all like mushrooms, basically. mushrooms are terrifying. fungal things are terrifying because they are like, oh God, it's terrifying. It has a number of trigger points for me and it's great. I love it. It's horrible and it's traumatic. But I had this thought about, like, so I was listening to a podcast and someone was talking about immortality. I think it was The Adventure Zone, actually, because they're doing a campaign with Dracula at the moment. And this whole thing about, they were talking about memory. And I thought that's interesting about how your memory, like, would it decay over time or whatever? And I was thinking, okay, what about brain cells?
Mm-hmm.
This is not science. This is just Mark garbage. But like the idea that, you know, memory might be lost due to loss of brain cells, just as an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So what if your immortality meant that none of your cells died?
Oh boy.
And how horrific, like, what would you be like?
Yeah.
I just had this image of just like an amorphous like mess because cells are keep growing and more stuff is growing, but the old cells aren't dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just become cancer. How terrifying is that? Oh, like that's a vote against immortality. You know what I mean? if you look at it like on a cellular level,
absolutely.
Because cells have to grow and die. So either your cells don't grow, you don't grow new cells, at which point I don't know what that means, or you keep growing new cells and the old cells don't die. And like that is genuinely, that's a really great premise for some horrible horror.
Yeah, for sure.
If you think about what that means, and I wonder if anyone's done that, because it's horrible to think about.
Yeah, that's gross.
So there you go. That's gross. Also, we have concerns. If we look at the middle tier of their Patreon, they're doing all right. I'll be quite happy with their numbers. They've got 1,853 members.
Amazing.
If each one of those is on the middle tier, that's, you know, in pounds, you're looking at £5,500. A month.
That's not bad.
Or just over $7,000.
That's awesome. I'm happy for them. They deserve
wouldn't
it.
Kick that in the teeth.
Yeah. Speaking of mushrooms. So I've been planning a vision quest where I'm going to do a 7 to 10 day fast.
Yeah.
While camping and not necessarily a silent retreat of my own, but kind of a, you know, I'm not going to be engaging with a lot of people, but I will be bringing some books and doing some and some notebooks and stuff to do some God mode learning and writing and everything. And I also plan on bringing some psilocybin mushrooms to engage in because I've done some sessions at home, and I've done some sessions at rave festivals, but I haven't ever done any that is just like out in quiet nature. And that sounds really enticing to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm building my plans for that. And I was looking up information regarding combining mushrooms and fasting. Like what are the plus sides, the downsides, the dangers, what to look out for. I'm trying to do it, you know, thoughtfully and prepare because I don't want to hurt myself.
Mm-hmm.
I found this article that was really interesting. They said it, like those have been combined for thousands of years. That's actually a lot of practitioners advise fasting before doing it, like when they like not ashwagandha. I don't remember what that fashionable one is for all the CEOs to go do in Mexico.
Oh, God. Yeah, no,
a lot of it's really common to combine them. And what happens is when you're fasting and you're taking a psychoactive drug, you don't need to take as much. Like, it's more potent, yeah, more effective, and that kind of thing. Yeah. So that was good to know. And so I can adjust my dosage appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
But another cool thing that interesting theory that was laid out in the article is that they'd heard this theory that a million years ago, monkeys, primates, whatever we evolved from, stumbled upon magic mushrooms.
Mm.
And that activated certain things in the brain. And that's why Homo erectus would then evolve from those, like, that was the catalyst, the change agent, the factor.
Really?
Yeah, it's a theory, and it's an interesting theory, because it does activate different things in the brain, and it changes chemistry, and it opens things up and brings awareness, and it kind of makes a lot of sense
to me. Okay.
Break it apart. Break it down.
Yeah. I feel like an evolutionary scientist would be able to bat that away in an eyelid, in a heartbeat, because, like, that's not how genetics and, you know, genetic traits get passed down. Where I can dig it is, like, I'll use a silly example. What made a primitive person go, you know that massive black and white animal there? I reckon if I grabbed its tits, I would get something that I could drink from, and I could drink what comes out of its tits. I think that would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, from the sense of, like, giving you an idea to do something that you would not necessarily normally do, and maybe that's a thing that catches on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, LSD, like, that, you know, Bicycle Day is the day that was that we celebrate to commemorate the discovery of LSD, which was, you know, this sort of accident, and then you know, the guy just dosed himself in different amounts and recorded what happened.
Yep.
And went cycling naked, I think, and hence Bicycle Day. So, you know, there's that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't, yeah, that's, for me, that's where it ends.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. It's, you know, what happens if I pick up this jawbone and hit it against this thing? Like, that kind of stuff. It's the outliers of, like, you know, the caveman equivalent of what happens if I press this button.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of LSD and mushrooms, I have been reading the autobiography of Ram Dass called Being Ram Dass.
Oh, yes, you have.
And wow, what a cool book. What a cool life.
What a cool guy.
Yeah. The amount of names that he's been dropping. His dad worked with Einstein multiple times. His dad also, like, he gave a roast for Richard Nixon at, like, a presidential inauguration.
Wow.
There's Ram Dass's friends, like Allen Ginsberg, a poet and everything. Alan Watts, of course. Timothy Leary, of course. They famously worked together for a long time. Aldous Huxley, William Burroughs, George Gershwin came and played a concert at their house for Ram Dass and his dad. Ken Kesey was a friend. And there was a bunch more that he name drops a whole bunch of people, and I don't know them all, but those were ones that stuck out to me. And his story of, like, his home life, like, I've heard so many stories of him caring for his mother and his stepmother and his father as they die, and being there with them and coaching them through death and that kind of thing. And that being a really crazy, different, weird experience for him because of his upbringing, but not really knowing the upbringing part. And the, you know, obviously the autobiography is really going into a lot more detail around that. It's like 13 hours of audiobook. And it was really cool to get all that backstory and understand how big of a deal it was for them to come together again at their deaths, and the role reversal of it all, and all these things. So that was really fascinating.
And then his story of becoming this psychologist, kind of out of defiance to his father, and then becoming really having quite the platform at Harvard with Timothy Leary and them creating the psychedelic club where they're studying mushrooms and LSD, and then getting kicked out because of that, which was supported, but now it's not fashionable anymore. So we have to fire you. And him being like the first person to be fired from Harvard for like 60 years or something. So it was like a big deal with that. And then having this huge following of people that see him as this psychedelic guru, of a lack of a better word, savant, you know, or a notable person. And then for him to like, and then he sees these drugs as a path towards enlightenment and trying to figure it out. He's trying to study it. And like, he's doing like 300 plus trips over the course of so many years. And each one, he's like documenting them and doing them with other people and getting their like test results, you know. It's like, how did you feel? What did you learn? And trying to gather all this data, and which is just kind of cool to look at it from the scientific perspective. And, you know, it's like he's really just trying to like figure it out. And then realizing that he hits a plateau, and it's like he can only get so far, and he always has to come back down. It's not a permanent change. Well, there is a permanent change, but it's not the permanent change that he's looking for. And then he goes traveling into the East, you know, in many different places, and ultimately finding his guru. And like his guru takes three LSD tablets. He just swallows them and then doesn't have a reaction at all. Like one of these tablets would have been a healthy trip for Ram Dass, who had already been doing many, many, many trips. He already had a tolerance. And he's just like blown away. Like, this guy is on another level. Like, not like another level isn't even the right, it's in another reality. Like, he has such control over his body. It's insane. Mm. And then, you know, other people taking other meditators taking some of these drugs and being like, yeah, that was fun, but I like meditation better. Like, I can get a better high from my own self. I don't need this. And things like that.
Shit.
I know.
Give me the chemicals. Like, I'm all about the chemicals.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Yeah, we need them. You know, we have a different.
I want them.
I want them. Yeah.
I want the drugs. I want all of the drugs. Yeah.
Yeah, and then his path back to the Western society, where he's then an advocate for the meditative life, for the connection to love, and that other way of seeing it and being, and then becoming such a big prominent figure in that in the Western realm of an access to that type of life, and having his audience kind of confused for a while. They're like, but we like the drugs. Okay. But the love is great. And then, okay, well, like, how do we, and eventually like that kind of reforms, and then he goes, he tells the story of kind of getting captured by some fans that take him to a retreat center, and then he doesn't really have a way out. And then they kind of call him out for, like, they're engaging with him, and he kind of gives a talk, and then they're like, "You're not really living what you say. You're just kind of talking." And he gets all bristly and defensive, and then he comes back down, and he's like, "Okay, you're right. I wasn't." And then they do this little ceremony on him, and he like starts, they all put his hands on him, and he starts crying like he's a baby. And he comes to a realization of something his mother told him when he was 3 years old that he never could have remembered before outside of the ceremony. And like a whole bunch of, man, this book is so great. Oh, I just love it so much. And yeah, I want the drugs too. I love the drugs are really great. they help a lot for these Western ingrained people. We don't have the same lifetime of exposure to sedentary not sedentary. That's the wrong word. We definitely have sedentary, connected, love connected lives. Like, where that's just the main focus of life is to connect to love. You know, I would dig that. I'd sign me up for that. But
LSD that hasn't been on my list, but I'm certainly not against it.
Same here.
Yeah. Cocaine is one that I want to steer clear of because I fear doing it and becoming quite like me with confidence would be, I think, unbearable. I would love it. I would have an amazing time and I would be like, I finally feel like I belong. I'm in my body. I'm, you know, all this stuff. Let's go do a million things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need me at 100%.
Yeah.
You probably need me at about 70%. That's probably about the right amount.
Yeah, that's great.
And I worry that I would love being at 100% and then it would become very expensive and I would probably start losing my friends. Uh-huh. So that's why I haven't tried cocaine. It's not been offered to me though. It has not been offered to me. I will stick with the lovely little plants.
Yeah. The
little green plants.
Yep. Yeah.
My weed and my hash that'll make me happy in as much as I mean it's been 6 years since I've had any.
I've never tried hash. I've pretty much just had weed and mushrooms. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I did mushrooms, but they were off.
Mm.
They'd been sat in a fridge in a sex shop for a little bit too long. Yeah, they were sort of past their best, but you know, had an effect.
That's cool.
But yeah, it was quite mild. One day we'll get together and we'll do all the drugs.
Oh yeah, yeah. When you come.
Oh, when I come to Portland, mate. Whoa.
We've got a good drug scene. I've got a nice healthy bag of very recent mushrooms in my freezer, and they've got your name on them, so come on over.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. This has been lovely.
It has been lovely.
I love our little chats.
Me too. And as always, correct me if I'm wrong.
It's Easter as we record.
Oh yeah, happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Does that mean anything to you?
Nah.
Yeah. This is it. I was having this conversation with someone today. Like, when you don't have kids, Easter's just like, oh yeah, now I've got to go and buy some people chocolate, haven't I? Okay. It's such a weird thing, you know, because then people buy you chocolate, and it's like, thanks, but I could buy chocolate. And sometimes, I'll be honest with you, Brendan, I do buy an Easter egg for myself. Like, sure. I have been known to do that because I love the curves on an Easter egg taste delicious. I love. I really like Easter egg chocolate. But like, if I want an Easter egg, I can buy an Easter egg.
I imagine the Cadbury cream egg in the UK is something to behold.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, there are Cadbury's cream egg Easter eggs, but all they are is just normal Easter eggs with a couple of, you know, normal sized Cadbury's cream eggs in foil. Like, there's nothing. Yeah, I don't think they make like a giant one because that is a heart attack. Just, you know, just biting into that and just all that nougat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that fun. No, it's fondant, isn't it? Yeah, all that fondant, just like, I can feel my heart already palpitating.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I cannot handle
keep them
that
hollow.
No.
Yeah. Although I did make, was it, I'm trying to remember whether it was Cadbury's cream egg brownies or if it was, I think it might have been mini eggs, which are my favorite. Are you aware of the mini egg?
No.
So a mini egg is about the size of a, it's a tiny little egg. It's a little egg.
Mm-hmm.
And it's solid chocolate encased in a sort of, a carapace of similar to like an M&M.
Mm-hmm.
But not so glossy. So it's, you know, it's just sugar on sugar, but it's got a lovely crunch. And then, you know, inside is just solid chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have a bag of, you know, I don't know, however many of those in a little bag. And they are wonderful. And they also make very good things to put in brownies. If you if you've just had a mental health crisis and you need something to occupy your time so that you don't go insane, you make brownies and then you bring them to your friend and then you complain at your friend about your mental health crisis and they go, oh, I'm sorry about that. Do you want another brownie? and then
you respond, yes. Yes, I do.
Yes. Yeah.
I'll take two.
That's 2019.